Our guest on this edition of Professionally Speaking, Pete Schrock of Comfort Zone Camps, a nonprofit organization that operates bereavement camps for children and adolescents in several states. Schrock speaks about what makes grief camps work, whether they work for everyone, and his take on how best to assist grieving tweens and teens. He was interviewed by HFA's Amy Tucci.
What does camp do for kids? What have you seen personally, how it can change a kid's life from where they are?
As a national program director, I go to as many camp programs as I can in a year. We run up to about 33 camps a year. And in that position, you get a really, you get a bird's eye view of what happens in a camp weekend. And what you see are kids having a lot of times the first opportunity to express grief in their own way. Not necessarily the technical aspects of grief or what we know to be mourning or grief or coping, but in real terms that are relevant to where they are in life, what's really going on, the complexities of their life after the death, moving forward. And so you see kids start to have the opportunity to form speech around those conversations, around those emotions. And you see them have the opportunity not only to form the speech, but to share it in their own voice, and then really kind of be rewarded by their peers and accepted by their peers. And what I mean by that is the validation of a child saying for the first time that they thought in some way that they had contributed to the death of their father, you know, thinking that they somehow had caused the death or they could have prevented it. And to see that child say that for the first time, take that burden off their chest, and a kid across the group say, oh man, I felt the same way. And this is why I felt that way. It becomes a moment that you couldn't really create in everyday life. Everything would have to line up perfectly for a child to be walking through their high school or their middle school in order to get that kind of affirmation or that affirming thought back to them. So being able to see kids have that opportunity and grab hold of it and use it, and then to see them have volunteers, clinical social workers, and other kids kind of praise them for taking that chance, creating a new comfort zone is probably one of the most rewarding and affirming things about the program, just from a bird's eye view.
So during the 3 days, basically 2.5 days, mm-hmm. Of camp, there's a mix of fun and skits and games and things like that, and also the sort of the clinical part of it, the meetings with
the healing circles and stuff.
Yeah, can you talk to me a little bit about that mix of the fun and the real work, for lack of a better term?
Yeah, we at camp, there's the idea that you want to have a balance in emotion and experience and look at the whole person. And so the idea is not to sit someone down in this intense grief conversation over 3 days, but to create some levity, create some moments of impact that aren't just supposed to be this profound conversation, but moments of success, moments of failure, moments of acceptance, moments of pure acts of courage, articulating something for the first time or realizing something for the first time. So what we try to do in a camp environment is create a learning atmosphere that's conducive to kids. And I've always explained this with the idea that, you know, as a parent or a caregiver, when you go to give your kids cough syrup for the first time, you give it to them, they go, oh, that tastes terrible, and they spit it out, and then you go to try to give it to them again, and they go, I'm not taking that again, it tasted terrible. Well, I think sometimes kids have that false idea of therapy or grief counseling, is that it's going to be awkward, that it's going to feel terrible, that it's going to mean something negative about them. And what we want to do is kind of change that cough syrup to taste like grape or gummy form, to where they want to consume it. They want more of it. It doesn't taste as bad, doesn't feel as awkward. And we felt like camp was the best medium, a vehicle to get that type of great information to kids in a way that they would want to use it and it would feel good, it would feel successful doing it. And so we try to balance it with traditional camp fun, s'mores, camp activities, repeat after me songs, challenge courses, some high impact rope courses, things like that. But we weave in there what we call healing circles. And these are the kind of the clinical support groups that happen throughout the weekend, where they're facilitated by a grief therapist or a clinical psychologist, or a licensed clinical social worker who kind of navigate the conversation with a group of kids. And so the idea is that you have this kind of this emotional roller coaster that allows them to not only talk about going through emotion, but it allows them to literally move through emotion successfully, and giving them times of intense conversation or meaningful conversation to meaningful play. And the idea with kids is that both of those are incredibly important. Oftentimes you'll see a kid after a loss move to humor or seem so light, all of a sudden we go, oh, they're so resilient. It's so amazing that they did that. I can't believe that they do that. We're still struggling with this. But that's how kids take in information. You know, the moments of being a kid, and there's moments of the mourning and the intense emotion.
Tell me about some of the special challenges of adolescence in a camp. First of all, just being adolescents and going through a loss, mm-hmm. with everything else going on.
Yeah.
As part of that. So that's my first question.
Mm-hmm.
Second question is in sort of dovetail. As somebody who's running a camps, what are the special challenges of having adolescents present at a camp? You know, hormones going
yeah.
crazy and everything like that.
Honestly, I think being an adolescent is tough enough. I mean, I think there's enough variables going on in your life to try to navigate, whether it's family dynamics, school, but also puberty, becoming, moving into adulthood, starting to realize real-life consequences, starting to look at information differently, different emotional responses. There's a lot of growth that happens within those adolescent years, and I think... alone, it's challenging for anyone to feel successful during that transition, where your body's changing, where your mind's developing, where your thoughts are changing, and then just the complexity of the external world. I think grief certainly adds a complexity to that. I think that knowing or as an adolescent wanting to be accepted, wanting to be an individual, but not so much that you're not accepted by the rest of the group, and I think that grief adds a complexity to that of, you know, our founder used to say she felt as a kid, and she lost both of her parents by the time she was 12, that it put the scarlet letter D around her, that everybody really defined her as the kid that had lost her parents, or the kid that this thing had happened to. So she said that she felt that the grief had kind of grabbed a hold of her and owned her. And it prevented her from creating these meaningful relationships. It prevented her, put her in a fear state where she wasn't fully willing to trust or open herself or be vulnerable to other people, which prevented her from having those meaningful exchanges. And I think that being an adolescent and dealing with that is incredibly difficult, but also being an adolescent and dealing with other adolescents who don't necessarily have the life experience or the wisdom that you might have at that time to be good with that kind of information. I think bullying, I think blaming, certainly if it's just lost by suicide, I think there's a lot of stigmas that are out there. And kids aren't always so great with information. Sometimes they're clumsy, sometimes they tease, sometimes they say things like it's your fault, or things that can really devastate the child that's going through it. So adolescence alone is a very difficult time with peer pressures. I think grief too is can be a traumatic experience, and you're going to cope with it the best that you can. And certainly when you're an adolescent and it's a time where you can be influenced by drugs, alcohol, promiscuity, those are all things that become really threatening or difficult for the child to successfully navigate through, especially if they feel the pressure of feeling different because of a stigma or a loss.
What about running a program full of adolescents who are grieving?
On the contrary, it's really interesting is that in a program where you have nothing but adolescents, but everyone's has this idea that they have had a similar loss or a loss, death of a parent or primary caregiver or guardian or sibling, what we have seen is this kind of incredible acceptance. The idea that all these other things that used to define us, used to become very important, how we identified ourselves, get lost in the translation of understanding, where kids really start to look at what someone needs or validating them. It's almost like your sense of emotional intelligence is heightened, where kids are really looking at each other and looking to understand. They're wanting to understand through asking questions of the other child. I think one, it's shows that they have compassion and they want to show that compassion, but I think they also want understanding. They want to hear what that person has to say in relationship to what they think or they feel, and validate against that. And so, that being said, adolescents are also adolescents, and you know, boys will be boys and girls will be girls, and when they're together, there's a lot of traditional camp enthusiasm and fun and high energy and reckless but safe behaviors that happen at camp. But that's part of being an adolescent too. I think some of that is just the idea that you're supposed to have fun, you're supposed to cut loose, you're supposed to test limits, you're supposed to test boundaries sometimes. But it's amazing to see when given the opportunity in the right environment, under the right leadership or guidance, they're really looking for a meaningful connection. They're really looking to understand. And I think that's what the grief camp can offer an adolescent.
In your experience with the adolescents that come to your program, are you finding that they're getting the support they need before they get to you? I mean, through a variety of methods, either through, some sort of therapy or through the school system or however, that might work?
That's a great question. We see a little bit of everything as far as support prior to camp. What I mean by that is that we definitely see, and sometimes it's the distance between the time of loss to the time they sign up for camp or become aware that there's a camp program for kids that are bereaved. And sometimes you'll see that families have been in local support groups or they've had one-on-one therapy sessions. They come into camp. Most times what you see is that they've tried a couple things and the kid's not attaching themselves to anything. They're really not feeling as connected to that form. At least that's what we're seeing in our programs. And so the kids come in to camp with an idea that it's a camp. They, again, kind of that grape-flavored sense of this feels good, this I'm feeling successful at this. And so a lot of times what we see is they leave camp more in tune or more open to going to support groups or going to one-on-one therapy or even having the conversation in the house. There's a ton of families that we see where they're almost paralyzed to have the conversation at home. The parent feels as though it will provoke an emotion out of the child. They don't want to hurt the damage of the child, which totally makes sense when you have your child who's vulnerable, who's crying in front of you, and you feel like you're the one that's causing it. Or the child that feels like every time I talk about mom, I see my dad weep, and I don't want to cause my dad pain. So I think that those things are happening in the home. And people are just choosing to kind of go to their rooms emotionally and just stay there because it's safer than having the conversation where it disrupts the flow or it creates all this emotion. But we see a lot of different, and there's also certainly the families that have been in ongoing support group or therapy that the therapist has referred them to the camp program, feel like it would be a great benefit to them, a great opportunity for them to see other kids, to be validated, to see that there are other kids dealing with this, they're not the only one. And so we see a variety of different uses of therapy or intervention prior to camp.
It's really interesting, sort of this change that we're seeing in grief work and all sorts of things.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's turning so much more to the internet, social media, that kind of thing. If you could talk a little bit about that, you know, the issues that are involved with social media in terms of grief and bereavement, and what you've seen with kids that are, and specifically adolescents who are at the camp. I mean, it has good points and bad points, right? I mean, there's sort of a disconnectedness.
Yeah, absolutely.
So talk a little bit about that.
I mean, I think social media has become a place where people can, in my opinion, it's an open diary. I mean, you, for good or bad, I mean, you put out there what you think. And some people don't necessarily understand the long-term ramifications of what that could mean. You know, you've definitely seen it used in a negative way of bullying or this, you know, I mean, I think bullying is probably one of the most predominant ways you could look at a negative that could come out of social media. Certainly the permanence of, like, putting anything out on the web, it just lives there now and it's in someone's file cabinet somewhere. But there's also the idea that it's relevant. It's a relevant medium kids are using. And kids are going to use it regardless of whether someone deems it appropriate or not. It's out there, it's being used, and it's being used in abundance. It's just like the format of texting. The number of families that I see now that communicate in the same house through text because they're either afraid of the consequence of the tough conversation or it's easier to pass it through text. But I can tell you, running groups, the old school philosophy of a therapist would say, well, why don't you write a letter? Write a letter to your mom, put it under her pillow. It forces her to read it, think about it, and think about how she's going to respond to you. So there's different ways to look at social media. There's certainly the negative sides. There's certainly the positive sides of it, too. Finding a community that exists beyond your physical one of support, of camaraderie, that shows compassion. I think what happens is that if we choose to use that and we choose to acknowledge that it's being used by adolescents, that we become as diligent understanding the technology as they are in using it. For example, on Hello Grief, we monitor that site. We have community supporters and an online community that monitors it. And it's monitored by CZC Comfort Zone staff, too. There's a lot of tools that are used for different words associations, different comments that would ping us and make us readily available. There's a login sign-in feature to it. There's an age limitation to it. And so there's different tools that you can use to make the medium more successful for the user, but certainly you're going to see it become more of a medium and self-expression for kids and for adults. I mean, it's us adults are starting to become savvy with it and understand, but I think for the adolescents, it makes sense. It's relevant. It's immediate. It's impulse driven. It's say what you feel, type it in, push send, and you can look at it and get the consequence of that or not look at it. And I think kids are going to continue to use it. So to me, I err on the side that families should always know what their kids are doing in the ideal world. But that's not always the case. I think the best thing you can do is help kids, help adolescents understand the consequences of the web. Self-expression through those mediums. But you also see great examples like Facebook or Hello Grief. We have a memorial page where when you first sign up, you can create a memorial, kind of a profile for your loved one. But you see kids now coming to camp or coming to camp programs, they're talking about their Facebook account that their father had that is still live, it's still active, they're still on it, they're still communicating to their friends. I had a great story of a young adult, one of our young adult programs that I ran, where this young girl, her father, died of a heart attack. And she was sitting there one night logging on his Facebook and looking at it and trying to remember, trying to capture all those feelings and those visuals and remember her father for who she remembered him to be. And she sent a message to all of his friends and said, if you have a memory of my father, or a favorite thing or a joke or anything that you think I would be proud of hearing about my father, send it to me. And she just got inundated with all these messages. So you see moments of absolute beauty in how social media provided this opportunity that how would you have ever, you know what I mean? Get a phone list and call all these people? But again, it just goes with the proper use and education of the tool, but it's a pretty profound tool if used in the right way.
One of the points that they made while developing the curriculum for this program was how important it is to provide grief support and counseling to adolescents through the lens of cultural diversity.
Absolutely.
And sensitivity. So can you address that?
To me, you look at grief and there's no way to look at it universally and just deem it all the same. You are talking about relationship, cultural, religious, just all these points of meaning in someone's life, of how they would make sense of something, how they take information in, how they would process it, what their truth is, what their beliefs are. And so you really have to recognize the whole person in order to even begin to understand what their grief could be like. It's such a unique experience, such a unique DNA to every person that you really have to look at and all those points. You have to look at, and when we do it, and when we do an information gather around a kid before camp, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to understand what are the successes of this child? What are the struggles? What religious background or affiliation does this child have? What's their faith? What's their opinion on that? What does their community environment look like? What type of cultural background do they have? What kind of food allergies they have? You know, the simple things too, but you're really trying to create as much understanding about the whole person. And the idea is that you identify the person and you recognize the loss. You don't identify the person by their loss. And if you start off with just identifying with the generic, oh, they've lost someone, this is how it goes, I feel like you've lost them at hello. You don't understand the complexities of their life, the complexities of what is important, what's a priority, what's a fear. And if you don't do that, you're not necessarily equipped to start the conversation of grief. And so the culture, the religion, the different aspects of humanity, all those things becomes incredibly important to really fully understand grief, mourning, bereavement.
Do you think that in certain segments of our society that their grief is disenfranchised in some way just due to the high rate of loss that may occur in those communities?
Mm-hmm. You know, it's funny, we did a program and it was an incredible experience to go into Chicago and to provide a bereavement, grief camp for kids who have seen and suffered such traumatic loss. Incredibly violent circumstances, from gang violence to domestic violence to murder-suicide, just an incredible amount. And a lot of times what we heard kids talk about in those groups were the fact that this isn't the first time they had been associated or been close to this type of loss. And so a lot of the conversation, although very intense, was in some ways just matter of fact, informative to us from them, of saying, this happened to my friend down the street. His mom was shot in the front yard during a drive-by. Or a kid who had been had seen or been near two different shootings that were in his direction, where he had covered up his little sister. And these are just testimonials from kids that we had worked with in that area. Certainly not a, to be a general analysis of Chicago, but just the amount of violence that these kids had seen, they seemed to talk of it matter-of-factly just because they had been around it so much. But as a group coming in, we were kind of, it took a step back just to get familiar with it before we jumped into it. But I think that these kids in those circumstances are just as much need as anyone. I think it's very, it depends around a lot of variables. What your community is ready to do, what your immediate support network is, and what they're ready to do or willing to do. Certainly, you see kids in all types of communities, all types of backgrounds that have immense struggles ahead of them. So I think every child's in need of support and direct care when it comes to grief.
On the other hand, most kids are pretty resilient in the long run, right? Maybe not within a year or 2 years, but in the long run, they're pretty resilient. Would you agree with that statement?
Do I think kids are resilient? I think that kids are absolutely resilient. I think that kids are as resilient long-term as the resources and the support around them. I think that just to deem a child resilient and they'll be okay, they'll bounce back, is definitely setting them up for failure. I think looking at what I like to see is the idea that we look at kids as not broken or damaged, but as resources to develop. And if we look at a child as a resource to develop, even under incredible circumstances, they can show incredible resilience and incredible hope. But they need to be developed. And I think they need the resources and the individuals and the information in order to be developed.
Is sometimes camp not the right fit for a bereaved adolescent?
I do think there are opportunities that camp can provide. I also think that camp's not always the opportunity for the child. There could be many factors that are going on that would prevent it from being a full experience, or the experience that the family's hoping for, or that the organization's hoping for. And so I think there's a balance of understanding what boundaries, what limits you have, and what you can accept at camp. And then sometimes you look at the situation or you talk to the family, and individual therapy is the best option. It really is going to depend on the family, what the family is looking for. Certainly there are going to be times where you're going to bring a child to camp and you're hoping that the experience is everything that they need, and they come out of it feeling good but going, I don't know if that was for me. I think I would like to talk to somebody individually, or I think a support group every Monday night is more suitable. And it also goes to communication style. Some kids are not wanting to go to camp and be hoorah, grief, talk about it, be in it, be social around it. Some people are much more personal and choose to go into more of a personal setting. And so I don't think it's a one fit. I don't think camp's for everyone, but I think it's for a good number.
Let me ask you one other thing. Mm-hmm. I lied about my last question, but...
I figured you did.
Do you see different types of loss?
That's a great question.
More difficult for adolescents to handle than other types?
We see all types of loss, and I've seen the struggle, the intense struggle, and really in every one of those situations. Suicide, homicide, sudden traumatic, accidental, long-term illness, and having the opportunity and the privilege of working with kids and all those, just those named types of loss, you see the complexity and the severity in each one of them. I'm sure that there are people that have opinions about one being more difficult than the other, but there are so many other factors that play into it, again, that I don't know that it's easy to point at one and say, that's the tough one. Out of all of them, that's going to be the toughest. I think whether it's the stigma, another great example is drug abuse, substance abuse. So there's a lot of stigmas, there's a lot of opinions, there's a lot of judgment around certain losses for sure. There's also some that are deemed easier. I sat in a group once where a little girl said, man, you're lucky that your mom died of cancer because you had a long time to spend with her and you could say goodbye. And the other girl replied, I guess you could look at it that way, but I also watched my mom die a really painful death. And she died in my house. And so I think that it's always the second and third question that you start to understand. And so just with the preliminary first question, you can sometimes ignorantly say, oh, that's the tough one. The rest of them, they're not nearly as bad. They're bad, but they're not as bad as that one. I think all of them, if given the opportunity to talk to a child, they would say it's one of the most difficult things they've ever dealt with.
You've been listening to Pete Schrock of Comfort Zone Camps on Professionally Speaking, an audio presentation of Hospice Foundation of America. Thanks for listening.